Blog Talk Radio.
Too much month left over at the end of the money? Bad credit holding you back? Want to become a real estate investor but haven't won the lottery? Learn how to fix your credit, get out of debt, and build true financial independence with real estate in 1 hour a week. Tune in to Unlock Your Wealth Radio with Heather Wagenhals. She'll show you how without winning the lottery or working 10 jobs. And here's your host, Heather Wagenhals.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. Who else wants to be rich on this sunny Saturday? I'm Heather Wagenhals, your hostess with the mostest, and we are broadcasting live from the HQ Real Estate and Investment offices here in Scottsdale, Arizona. And for Saturday, April 4th, as well as every Saturday at 10 a.m. Pacific, we broadcast the Unlock Your Wealth radio show and talk about crisis management and financial wellness designed to help every man, woman, and child alike manage their finances and attitudes for the single purpose of financial independence. I am so excited. Welcome, April. I'm waiting for the April showers so we can have lovely May flowers next month. I'd like to give a shout out to my stepson and his little buddies at their slumber party who are tuning in to listen because we have a spectacular guest. Well, we have several spectacular guests this week, but most specifically, we have Sharon Lechter. And if you don't recognize her by the name, you will know that she is a best-selling author and on the President's Advisory Council for Financial Literacy. So she's one of our featured guests this week as we talk about financial literacy, as April is Financial Literacy Month, and it is so very important to understand money and how it works. Clearly, our congressmen don't, as you can see with what's going on with our financial crisis. That's also something that we're going to talk about upcoming on the show. We have our trivia question, as always, which I'll give you in a moment. Minutes on Your Money this week is the big credit scam you are paying for, and also, are we dipping into our retirement savings? Why, and what are the ramifications? On the Investor's Edge this week, we have a guest, multifamily investment expert John McDonald, is going to talk about current market trends and why it's a great time to invest during this segment. We also have our regular scheduled segment, News by the Numbers, with the infamous Karen Gurm. Coming up for our keys, because our first key is, and how apropos that our keys reset themselves right at the beginning of Financial Literacy Month, is acceptance and affirmation for this week for the keys to riches. And to help talk about how we can make that more successful, we have NLP Master Practitioner, trainer and success coach Bill Thomason, who toured with personal power guru Tony Robbins to help get started on the to help us get started on the road to financial independence. And I just want you all to know, if you notice our coaching page at the Unlock Your Wealth website, I mentioned that even the best of us need coaches, and I am so very proud to say that Bill is my personal coach. In Nuts and Bolts today, we're going to talk about the five P's, and as always, with our key, we get our key statement, our key affirmation, and our key action item. Pardon me there. In April in Arizona, we have these fabulous winds that bring us lovely allergies. So forgive me for a moment. Let's move to the trivia question. And today's trivia question, as you know, in every week, we reach to the week before, so astute listeners and regular listeners of the broadcast can always have a chance to call in to win. We are giving away 13 weeks of coaching as well as our money management ledger. Now is the perfect time as we get started with the keys to get moving forward on the right foot. And as we come up with next week's key, which is assessment, our money management ledger plays in perfectly to that. So wouldn't it be great if you were the one to win? And then you get to start next week, and you'll already have your money management ledger. So the trivia question is, name two of the seven fast fixes for your credit score. Two of the seven fast fixes for your credit score. In addition, I'm also interested in if anyone decided to take that financial fast we talked about last week, and I wanted to find out how it's going. So in addition, if you would like to speak with our guest Sharon Lecter coming up shortly, call in now and speak with our scheduler so you can get in line to be on the broadcast. That telephone number is area code 718-508-9002. Again, 718-508-9002. Now, if you're calling in for trivia, you want to wait till the second half of the broadcast. And we have moved to 2 hours, I'm so happy to tell you. So save your questions for Sharon and your answers for the trivia question for the second hour. So you'll have to call in again to win that. So moving forward, to kick off Financial Literacy Month, I thought it would be super incredible to have one of my biggest role models, I would say, in financial and money management on the broadcast today. Sharon is the best-selling author of the Rich Dad Poor Dad series, as well as the new Youthpreneur project that she has. And if she wasn't busy enough with those things, she is also on the President's Advisory Council for Financial Literacy. Goodness gracious, today I'm tongue-tied. In addition to that, she just returned from her trip from Washington, D.C., so I'd like to talk about that as well on the broadcast. So if everybody could, please help me welcome Sharon Lecter to the broadcast. Sharon, great to have you on the show today.
Hello, Heather. I'm delighted to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, I'm so excited to have you on. I've been trying to connect with you personally for months, but I've been a big admirer for many years, and I think that you have done a significant amount locally with the Arizona Council for Economic Education, which works with youth, as well as now you're on the National Financial Literacy Advisory Council. So tell us a little bit about National Financial Literacy Month.
Well, it has been around for several years, Heather, but never more important than right now. And through the help of people like you bringing focus to it, I think people are going to understand that we wouldn't be in the economic drama that we are today if people had been more educated with about money and money matters. So financial literacy, it's really the gift of a lifetime to someone to be able to teach them about money. We want to be able to be in control of our money and not be a slave to it. And I think I'm talking to the choir here, but it's so very important to acknowledge it and to bring awareness to it, because it is through the fear right now with the markets. The markets are not reacting based on fundamentals. We are dealing in a market of fear. And the way to deal with that fear and get rid of it is through education, and financial literacy is how we can get control of our lives again.
Oh, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I've been on this bandwagon for some time, and I know you're really good friends with my brother-in-law, Jeff Cutler, and he's a financial advisor. And when we used to do a show together, we had Fluffy the Financial Dinosaur, because Barney teaches us to get along, but who teaches us about money management? And I think that that's kind of gone by the wayside. And to speak to the point, national financial literacy has been around for years, but, you know, how did we know about it, and why are we in this crisis? So it's really important to celebrate this and be an active participant. Tell me, Sharon, what goals does the President's Advisory Council have, and have you made any headway to reach any of those so far?
Well, I was thrilled, absolutely thrilled with the question, Heather, because we have. It's almost like reaching a goal of my lifetime. In 1992 is when my oldest son went to school and got into college credit card debt. And so in 1992, I pretty much dedicated myself to financial literacy education and trying to bring it into children's lives most specifically, and certainly in the adult world as well. And in January of 2008, President Bush launched the very first President's Advisory Council for Financial Literacy. And there are 16 of us on the council. Charles Schwab is the chairman, and we have been working tirelessly for the last year and 4 months to really analyze and to promote financial literacy in not only our educational system but in the workplace, and to try and make sure that financial services are made available to those who need it most, the ones that are underserved, that don't have banking relationships. So our focus has been in five major areas. And I will tell you that within the last month, we have had bills introduced to both the Senate floor and the House floor, most specifically Senate Bill 638 and the House Bill 1649. And those bills will, if we can get the support, and I invite anyone listening to please contact your congressman, contact your senators, and ask them to support these bills. They will require financial education within the K-12 system as well as the post-secondary systems. And so this has been really the work of my last almost 20 years to get financial education within our school system, because it is, we can teach our children about algebra, we can teach them about history, but a truly life skill education is one that teaches them about money.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I guess my question, and I don't know that you or anybody could really answer this, is why have we waited so long?
Well, I think, you know, you hear the term the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, and unfortunately that really is reality, because people have learned about money from their parents. And parents don't want to talk about money, particularly if they are in financial distress. They don't want their children to know it. So if there is a silver lining out of today's current economic drama and trauma, is that everyone is talking about it now. And so it gives you an opportunity as a parent to really talk about money, talk about what's happening in the economy, and bring awareness to it and start educating our children, which, as you mentioned, my new initiative, Youthpreneur. It is so vitally important that our young people today are taught about finances and taught about money, because for the first time in history, our generation is going to be giving our children less than what we received based on what's happening with the national debt. So they must be taught the skills to be able to find a way to support themselves and not be dependent on an employer or a government.
You know, you're so right. And just to give a heads up to the listeners, we're going to get those links to the Senate and House Bill 638 and 1649, respectively, on the unlockyourwealth.com website, so you can find those bills and then be able to go. The government has great interactive websites, and you can create a direct link email to your particular representative or senator and send them a letter saying that you want to see this get passed, because we need to take drastic measures. Clearly what's been going on cannot continue.
And I think, you know, the other thing that we've talked about before, Heather, is that teachers were afraid to teach it because they didn't feel like they knew it. And with the advent and when the ability to get wonderful curriculum online, we have the opportunity to educate our teachers as well as our students and provide parents the resources that they need. And when they take the time to start teaching their children, they'll actually learn a few things on their own as well.
Now, I know that was one of my focuses, because so many times when I see people and they're trying to buy a home and they're struggling with financing and they keep getting derailed when we put them, you know, on financial savings and spending plans, their one weakness is their kids, and they just don't want to say no because they don't want their kids to suffer, so they get sucked in. And that's why I wrote my Keys for Kids book, because it's important that kids understand their role within the family unit and how they can help participate to create financial independence for all of them. And it's such a weight off of a parent's shoulders when they don't have to talk down to their kids. I remember hearing when I was a kid, we can't afford that, or put that back if I grab something off the shelf at the grocery store or, you know, somewhere. Oh, I just, but mommy, just one thing. And it's so hard to say no, especially when you have broken families, reassembled families, and it's difficult, and kids are a significant factor in that. And if we can educate our youth number one, that makes it easier on us to be able to put together and stick to our budgets because we've got participation, but now we have accountability. And accountability for kids when they crave discipline and structure really makes their self-worth go up. So I'm excited about these two bills, and I really hope that we can get them passed into law and start significantly making inroads with our children and financial education for sure.
And I couldn't agree with you more, Heather. And the other piece about teaching the elements of money is experiential learning. Unless you give your children the opportunity to be in control and make mistakes, I say we need to let our children stub their toes while they're still at home so they don't break their legs when they go off to college. It's so important, and that's all of the programs that we're doing through Youthpreneur are based on experiential teaching and experiential learning. We have a prepaid debit card that we created with Visa that has no charges on it, but it gives a child the opportunity to feel in control of their life. And I had a mother call me 2 weeks ago and say, Sharon, it was incredible. I was at Dillard's, and my son, who always talks me into these $200 basketball shoes, I gave him the upside card, and I said, you've got your card. Go ahead and charge those shoes if that's what you want. And he chose the $60 variety, and he was proud of himself for doing it because he was in control of the decision making. And that's what it gives them self-esteem. It gives him control. And our children need to be in control, and they need to have the opportunity to make mistakes and to learn from them.
Well, yes, and what an interesting learning opportunity. When it was his money, all of a sudden those $200 sneakers weren't as attractive.
That's right, and it was a teachable moment. You know, with parents, having this card is gives a parent somewhat of an excuse. It takes the emotional element out of it because you kind of talk to the kid ahead of time. You determine what if it's their allowance or whether they have a part-time job. The money can go onto that card. So I talk about parents feeling like they have ATM tattooed on their forehead. Many parents have no clue how much money they're giving to their children. So this actually gives the parents a budgeting tool as well. And invariably, the child will be run through the money within the first 15 days of the month. And all of a sudden, you now have a teachable moment. You have an opportunity to go online and say, okay, where did this money go? How did we spend it? What kinds of decisions could we have made? Did we buy wants or did we buy needs? And it gives you the opportunity to analyze it in a less emotional environment.
Oh, I think that's fantastic. Can we take a step back for a moment and talk about the big picture of Youthpreneur and how you started the project? I know we're getting into some of the details of the value of Youthpreneur, but can you give us a big picture and where you started along the path? And I think your son's involved in it too, isn't he?
Yes, my son, Philip, the one who got in college credit card debt, is part of the company. It took him 5 years to get himself out of credit card debt, and I'm really proud of him because it was through that experience that he learned how to better manage his own money. And Youthpreneur really has been a passion of mine since 1992, and I was very fortunate to be part of the Rich Dad Company and 12 years of 25 books and the games that we had. But I never lost my passion for young people and for families and teaching families and children, because at the end of the day, our people come into our lives and they leave. But our family is always there, and our children, we want the best for them. And many times parents do too much for their children, and they become enablers, we don't give our children the support and the ability for them to start making decisions on their own. And so my passion was to create opportunities for children and also opportunities for parents to have the materials that they needed. We have things, right now we're doing a tip for the day where parents can look at their own information and get control of their financial lives. And it's one step at a time. You know, it is a daunting subject, and when people are in the financial distress, they feel paralyzed. And we want to give them just a little thing. And I heard you talking about on your radio show your tip, your action item for the week. That's exactly what people need, because once they start taking those little steps and they start feeling empowered, and our children, need goals. And what's happened is with credit cards, we have instant gratification. So our children are missing out on setting a goal, achieving it, and celebrating. And that's how you build self-esteem. So what we've created in the whole Youth Mentor Project are things that you can do with your children that are small assignments, small things with the child that are fun, financial field trips, opportunities for you to discuss money, discuss economics and finance, so that it's not intimidating. But in the process, the more you learn about how the world of money works, the more empowered you are, and the more we want to turn that entitlement mentality into one of empowerment. And once a child understands money, they'll be able to take care of themselves forever.
Oh, I know, and that's the long-term ramifications are so incredible. So what age is the range for youthpreneur? When can you start this with your kids?
Well, an interested parent can start with a child as young as 6 years old. I mean, we have an opportunity for parents to work with their children with a simple gumball machine. Or the website is also a social networking for teenagers ages 13 to 25. So it gives the opportunity for a young person to figure out how they can make money, how they can create their own independence. And it's something that is totally supported by their parents. And the biggest thing is to give them a chance to operate in the world of money when the risk is small. And the learning is lifetime learning.
Well, I'm super excited about the opportunities that lay for kids that participate in Youthpreneur. What kind of other long-term advantages do you see, not just for the kids themselves, but maybe for, you know, our country as a whole, that when people can participate, can you just kind of dream with me for a bit and see what kind of an idyllic world we could possibly have?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, my other projects, I've got a new book coming out in October, Heather. If you are familiar with the book Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, in 1908 he interviewed Andrew Carnegie, and Andrew Carnegie said, you need to go out and study what makes people successful. And 25 years later, during the Great Depression, Think and Grow Rich was released by Napoleon Hill. And Think and Grow Rich has long been heralded as the beginning of personal development, the first personal finance book, and it has also been credited for helping us get out of the Great Depression, because it talks about taking responsibility for yourselves. It talks about capitalism, building your own business, building your own wealth. And so I've been working with the Napoleon Hill Foundation for the last couple of years, and in 1908 was when Napoleon Hill started. In 2008, I took the charge with the Napoleon Hill Foundation to, again, analyze what helps people keep going during the difficult times. And so in October, we'll be releasing a book called 3 Feet from Gold, and it's about turning your obstacles into opportunities and to allow people to, again, analyze what some of our most successful people in the world today, what did they do when they were facing their darkest hour? How did they persevere? How did they keep going when everything seemed against them? And many of these people, you couldn't believe how they continued to persevere, yet at the same time, when they broke through that last barrier, they found great success. And it is that perseverance and that ability to succeed that I hope will bring hope to people who read the book this year because of what's happening in our current economy.
You know, that's incredible that that's what you've been working on, because that was one of my first personal development books that I read, and I was so lucky that I happened to have been able to study under a really wonderful man that gave me just a stack of books and said, read these first and then come talk to me about a job, because he wanted to set my framework for success up before I even got started with him, and I was pretty fortunate for that. And what I think of when I think of Napoleon Hill and his works and what I'm involved with now, which is neuro-linguistic programming, which is all about what is excellence and how do we create and model success. And that is one of the key things that really takes, when you give people goals, regardless of what's going on, if someone can create a satiable, palatable, tasty goal that they can work for, they don't really notice what's going on in the world around them. And every new problem now becomes an opportunity to succeed in another way. And I think that's probably what I got out of Think and Grow Rich was, you know, I never see failure as failure. I only see failure as an opportunity to succeed in another way. And we have my success coach on in the second half of this program, Bill Thomason, who trained with Tony Robbins. So I feel like I'm one away from the master when it comes to that. So I'm really excited and looking forward to your new book and see how you put your thoughts and experiences to the incredible foundation that Napoleon Hill built. Now, I have a caller on the air. Would you be interested in taking a call?
Absolutely.
Okay, it looks like we have Brandon on the line with a question for Sharon. Welcome to the show, Brandon.
Hey, everyone.
Hi, Brandon.
What would you like to ask Sharon?
Well, I'm thinking before a child really starts working, what's the best way that a parent could really teach a child how important money is? Could they give them an allowance and let them manage the money? Is that a healthy thing to do?
Oh, absolutely. A child needs to be as early as possible. People say to me, you know, that children are too young to talk about money. But I ask, how old do you think a child is when they know the difference between a $1 bill and a $20 bill? And invariably the answer is 4 or 5 years old. So a child understands the difference in value, but they don't attach the value to their decisions. And if you can give them the opportunity to start making those decisions at an early age, then they can start understanding the consequences of those decisions. If they're not the ones making the decisions, they're not going to learn the consequences, and that's why we have so much trouble today. So yes, if they have an allowance, I have a totally different philosophy on allowance than a lot of people. I think there are certain things a child needs to do because of personal responsibility for which they should not get an allowance. I think a child has certain family responsibilities for which they should not get an allowance. But then to give them the opportunity to earn allowances and to create that gives them the ability to, how Heather said earlier when she was a child, and many of us have heard, we can't afford it. Well, instead of saying we can't afford it, say how can we afford it? What can we do to create an opportunity for our child? Give them the opportunity to be creative and think about new ways and new chores, things that they can do to increase their allowance, and then allow them to have that money and allow them to make decisions on how they're going to spend that money.
Nice.
Great question, Brandon.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Thank you.
All right. Well, you have a great day. And just for calling in, Brandon, I'm going to put you on hold. And I'm going to give you one of our money management ledgers so you can be prepared for next week when we start on our assessment key. Okay, Sharon, I've got another caller on the air. Would you like another question?
Absolutely.
Okay, hang on 1 second. I don't know. Oh, yes, I do know. This is Joanna. Joanna, welcome to the broadcast.
Hello, thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Great. What's your question for Sharon?
Yes, Sharon. I have a nephew. He's 14 and he's super creative, always thinking of ideas. I was wondering, how can the Youthpreneur program benefit him?
Well, that's a great question, Joanna. Thank you. The Youthpreneur website has an opportunity for your nephew to connect with other young people his age. And he can also see how other young people are creating their jobs and applying those ideas. And he can also reach out to people and have them give him ideas. If he's creative, that is the first, that's 90% of the recipe he needs to be successful. Because what happens so often in our public education system, if you think about first graders, they're very excited, they're jumping up and down, raising their hands, wanting to participate, wanting to ask questions. And you fast forward 10 years and those same 6-year-olds are now 16, and they're in the back of the class. The front row is empty. The last thing on earth they want to do is look at the teacher or raise their hand. And so the public education system, during that 10 years, has taken that creativity, that love of learning away from them, and that's what we want to put back into the educational system. And it sounds like your nephew has been very fortunate in having wonderful teachers and wonderful opportunities to keep that creativity and not have it stifled. So I would absolutely encourage him to go out and experiment with his ideas and find ways that he can earn money, because that's what entrepreneurship is all about. And entrepreneurship is what's going to get us out of the current economy that we're in. But thank you for your question.
Yes, I agree. Thank you.
Okay, and Joanna, I should have done this on the last call, but I didn't think about it. I'm going to give you a choice of having the money management ledger to start with for next week, or would you like 13 weeks of financial coaching?
Oh, wow. Coaching, definitely.
Great. Okay, well, I'm going to put you on hold and have you talk to my board operator and get your personal information so we can get you set up. Thank you so much for the call. Now, Sharon, we started a little bit talking about it, but tell me more about your tip of the day for Financial Literacy Month and how can our listeners sign up for it? I know I'm a big Facebook and Twitter person, and so I follow you and I'm getting them all, but can you share with the audience how they can also get your tip of the day?
Certainly. Several different ways. If they're on Twitter, they can look me up, or on Facebook, or they can go to SharonLechter.com. Or slechter.com. So what I'm trying to create is a movement, and I would love for people, if they feel a benefit of the tip, to share it with their friends and to share that financial education and have people have an opportunity to start looking at their finances in a bite-sized way, because again, if people feel overwhelmed and they have a hard time looking at the big picture. But if we can start looking at little things that they can do, and they have an opportunity to start taking a positive step, that they can start seeing the results. And I thank you for all that you're doing for individuals. And my goal is just to try and send out something each day during this month that people can refer to and really incorporate in their own lives to start repairing their own financial health.
Great. Well, I know I always look forward to those. I love the way social media has moved, and I am so grateful for it, because you and I are so fortunate, because it gives us a broader base to disseminate our information and really help move forward our cause and help us fulfill our legacies by creating financial literacy here in this country.
Well, I'm an old lady trying to learn new tricks. So with the help of my son and my grandson, I will figure this out. But we're working hard to try and get the information out as best we can, and I appreciate your help in letting people know about it.
Absolutely. Every week we're here giving another key away, giving people tools to help build their own financial independence. So how can parents get their kids involved with Youthpreneur?
Well, it's very easy. There's no cost involved to join the website. The kids can go on and join. There are programs on the Youthpreneur website that the children can actually use to create their own businesses as well. So it's not just an educational website. It's an opportunity for them to exchange ideas with other young people. It's an opportunity for them to actually create their own business. We have something called TAPS, which is Tips, Affirmations, and Positive Sayings. And it's created so that parents can, for $24 a year, $25 a year, we send out two positive messages on their text where children live on their cell phones. One is a general life quote, which is like, you're awesome. Another one is a financial tip that comes to their cell phone once a week. And that's something that we created to help. So many parents tend to spend our time telling our children what they're doing wrong. And I wanted to give parents an opportunity to help give their child a pat on the back at a time when maybe they're not there with them. And so the TAPS program gives them positive affirmations as well as a life skill quote each week. And it's an opportunity for the children to actually become a salesperson and create their own little business, and they can go out. It's set up so that organizations or schools or charities can do this and get money back. Everything we do at Youthpreneur has a charity component to it. So the children can create their own business and earn money while they're learning about money and be able to have the opportunity to give back to their community.
I think that's fantastic, and you really hit on an incredible point. Sometimes we just get wore out telling our kids what not to do, and by the time we're done, we're so tired that we forget that maybe we should encourage them in little ways along their path, because you know, they're not just an extension of us. Sometimes we feel like, you know, that's just mini me when it's another individual that may have completely, entirely different thoughts, dreams, hopes, goals, and aspirations. And no is a tough thing. I know I get worn out saying no. And to be able to share just a little bit, I mean, is so great. And that TAPS program is really an exciting part of Youthpreneur. And I just have to take a step back and be a fan for a moment and say, I am so honored to be following in your footsteps. I'm so grateful and I feel so empowered because we're running parallel tracks. And it's just, it's neat to have had such an incredible woman like yourself kind of blaze the trail to give me my opportunity to share my passions about money management and creating financial independence for people.
Well, thank you, Heather. That's a real compliment, and I'm honored by it. But I really applaud what you're doing, and I do believe that the world of business in the future is one that's going to be built on collaboration and cooperation, not on competition. And until everyone is financially independent, there is room for all of us out there, and I think if we can support each other and continue moving in the right direction and just expose enough people to the opportunities, that they'll find what works for them. And give them the opportunity and the incentive and encourage them and motivate them to take that first step, because it's always that first step that is the hardest.
Yes, it sure is. Well, Sharon, can you give us three things that you can leave us with for us to think about over the next weeks that are most important to achieving financial literacy for us as a community, as individuals, as parents?
Certainly, I have my my AAA financial guide, and that is, the first A is awareness. And awareness is accepting the fact that you may not be in the perfect financial position, or that you are that you might have some things that you need to change, some habits that are not helping you, that are pulling you back. And it's through that awareness that we acknowledge that we need to do something and that we need to take steps. And then the second one is application, and that application is to actually start that first baby step, start doing something, whether it be looking at how much money you're spending on housing, as one of the tips was yesterday or the day before. Look at how much money you're spending on certain things, and analyze how you've spent your money, and truly be honest with yourself. Were those wants or were they needs? And some of those things that we think we need, maybe we don't need as badly. So maybe we need to start making a few different decisions and actually start making those changes in your daily life. I have something called the two-minute rule, where my daughter got after me last year because I would give away things to Goodwill that still had tags on them. I'm a terrible impulse buyer. And so I started saying, okay, when I see something I want, I'm going to set it aside and come back in 2 minutes, and if I still want it, I'll buy it. And last month, my daughter was with me again, and I gave things away to Goodwill, and I had no tags. So that was a big good step in the right direction for me.
Yay! Personal applause for you. It's nice to know you're human.
Oh, yes. So, you have the awareness, and then you start the application. And if you can get past the first two, once you start that application, then you're going to get into acceleration. And the acceleration is how you are going to be able to propel yourself to get the financial life that you want. But that will not happen if you are not aware of where you are and where you need to be and start applying the steps to get there.
Wow. Thank you so much. And that just speaks to today's points of acceptance and affirmation. Until we accept and realize we need to deal with what's on our plate, we can't just keep ignoring it. We can't move to make a difference. So that just speaks to that point. Where can people get more involved? Let's give out some of your websites and any phone numbers that you want if people want more information from today's broadcast.
Oh, absolutely. Well, they can reach me at Sharon@youthpreneur.com, or they can go to my website, SharonLechter.com. I would welcome to hear from them. I would welcome them to join me on Twitter and Facebook and to share the financial tips with all of their friends. That would be an easy thing for them to do and a way for them to support and help their friends as well. There's no cost involved at all. It's an effort to reach out and reach as many people as possible. And number two, as we started this segment, Heather, is to really help me and help the council by contacting your congressman, contacting your senators, and say we need financial education in schools. You know, so much of our public education is related to teaching to the test. And we really need Americans to stand up and say we must prepare our children for the future. And the only way they're going to be prepared to succeed is that they understand money and they understand that they need to be in charge of their money and not be a slave to it. So truly they can support by just picking up that phone. And as you said, there's a way to do it easily online. Let their congressmen, let their senators know to support these bills. And it's Senate Bill 638 and H.R. Bill 1649. And I would really appreciate any support that they could give us.
Absolutely. And I'll put those links on our unlockyourwealth.com website. I'm sending an email off to the techies now and have the Webby guys get that up there for everybody, for all the listeners of the show, so they can follow up and let their feelings be known about financial literacy. Well, it was an incredible honor to share this time with you today, and I'm so grateful you took time out of your weekend to spend it with us. That means so much to me and to our listeners. And we will do whatever we can to help support you and the council to create financial literacy for everyone else.
Well, Heather, thank you also for what you're doing, because the listeners are here because they trust you and support and look for the counsel that you give them. So I thank you for what you do and applaud you for everything that you're doing for people.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. That is just, I'm beaming because I look so far up to you. And so to have you say that is an incredible, gracious statement. So thank you so much. I accept that compliment wholeheartedly.
Well, have a wonderful weekend, and keep doing what you're doing, because it's going to take all of us to get people to take that first step.
Great. Well, thanks again, and you have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you so much.
Sharon Lecter, everybody. I will have links up on the website for all of the action items that she's having us take care of with our Congress people, but also links to her websites for more information to get your kids involved with Youthpreneur. Up next, we will have John McDonnell, our multifamily expert on the Investor's Edge, talking about the state of the multifamily housing industry. You are listening to Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I'm Heather Wagenhals. We'll be right back after this.
If I were a rich man, all day long I'd busy, busy long. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. If I were a busy, busy rich, idle, 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 idle man, I'd build a big tall house with rooms by the thousand, right in the middle of the town. A fine tin roof with real wooden floors below. There could be one long staircase just going up, and one even longer coming down, and one more leading nowhere just for show.
Welcome back to Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I'm Heather Wagenhals, and you are listening to the first key this week in the Keys to Riches on our fabulous two-hour broadcast. We just had Sharon Lecter on, for those of you who are just tuning in. She's got upcoming books and projects, as well as the Youthpreneur Project, which is a great way to teach your children about money. If you weren't able to tune in previously, you can always go back and download archive broadcasts to your iPod or your MP3 players. So make a note. You really want to listen to what she has to say. It was an incredible interview, and gosh, I'm so fired up and excited with what she had to say and how important financial literacy is for the future of our country and our economy to really educate our youth. I'm so excited about our next guest for the Investor's Edge. I'm excited because, number one, I motivated this next guest to pursue the career he is in, and he has certainly done me proud. I'm talking about Johnny McAwesome, John McDonnell with Axiom Advisors. He is a multifamily housing expert. He is in the trenches, and I have never known any multifamily guy I've ever worked with in the real estate community that knows his stuff, that tracks the market city by city, and really works to cultivate a great mindset with his investors so he helps them build their financial independence. Johnny McAwesome, welcome to the broadcast. Are you there?
Thank you very much. That was a very warm introduction.
Well, I think pretty highly of you. You've done me proud. I've had the opportunity to teach a lot of students in real estate when I taught actively at the Professional Institute of Real Estate, but you're probably the one that's done me the most proud. And so I'm really excited to have you on the broadcast because we've been talking a lot about real estate investment for the Investor's Edge. So these are people that have either graduated from the Keys to Riches Financial Freedom Series program, or they are already real estate investors participating in the Master's program. And so they're looking to take their real estate investments to the next level. And one of the things over the years that I've always liked was multifamily housing for a couple of reasons. One, it was always a great source for me to get people involved in my workshops, taking people from renter to homeowner to real estate investor. But not just that, I like multifamily housing because compared to other types of real estate investment, everybody has to have a place to live. Nobody has to open up a business or nobody has to have an industrial complex, but everybody has to have a place to live, and they want that to be safe and they want that to be consistent. And with multifamily housing, whether you're an investor or a tenant in a multifamily housing apartment scenario, you know that there's a roof over your head when you need it. And whether you're starting out and you're just in college or you moved out of the house for the first time into an apartment complex, or you're a seasoned real estate investor, and I think that multifamily housing is fairly recession-proof because no matter what's going on in the economy, everybody needs a place to live. Would you agree or disagree with that?
I would absolutely agree with that. It's a lot easier to, with good management, to have high occupancy in any economy.
So give us kind of an overview of what's going on. Now, specifically, Arizona is your market, but that doesn't preclude you from paying attention to what's going on nationally. So kind of update us, if you will, on what's going on in the multi-housing industry and what you've seen over the last year.
Over the last year, it's been a difficult market, a very challenging market. In specifically Arizona, the immigration sanction really hurt occupancy levels in apartment buildings across the valley. Nationwide, occupancy has decreased a little bit, primarily due to the shadow market, which is the homes for rent, the investors that came in and bought homes, and now they're renting them out, and they're renting them out at a very, very reasonable rate that's competing with apartments. So overall, the occupancy nationally has decreased a few percentage points, but in Arizona, specifically, it's about 14 to 15% vacant.
Well, I don't think people really consider that. Would you say other border states like Texas and California and New Mexico are also kind of dealing with that same issue in their marketplace?
I would say so. Overall, nationally, there's a challenge. There's an occupancy issue, and to cover that, investors and my clients have had to drop their rents or offer concessions. But overall, I think the economy, as soon as it turns around, we're going to see occupancy levels rise, probably above where they were in 2007.
Do you think that the current status of the federal government kind of trying to put some limits on foreclosures and trying to keep people in their houses is a factor too as to why vacancy levels aren't rising, or is that not enough people to make a difference in the vacancy rates currently?
No, that has an effect. I think the banks that are keeping people in their homes and not foreclosing them out are sort of keeping the occupancy level stagnant. I don't see any significant increases or decreases for about the next 6 months.
I think it kind of hampers the progress, if you will. And I guess my biggest pet peeve, and I hope I don't digress too much from our investor segment, is that because the government has interfered with the process, people are not getting the opportunity to learn their lesson about how they made a mistake with their current housing situation. And by letting them stay in their homes, they're delaying the opportunity to learn that maybe I need to move into an apartment and start over and get on a different track this time around. I think that we're just delaying the inevitable, but as a result of delaying the inevitable, you know, our multifamily prize of investment are not really able to see those returns of these ineffective decisions that people have made buying homes that probably shouldn't have or shouldn't have bought as much home as they did. And so that's my kind of bummer about all of this, you know, because that was one of the things that I was looking forward to when the housing market started to tank. I thought, oh, wow, well, all the apartments are just going to crank now. And that was kind of my disappointment because, you know, Uncle Sam kind of interfered with all of that. What do you think?
I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. I think the government stepping in disturbs the naturally recurring process of from homeowner that bought too much home or over-leveraged, overpaid, to renter in the apartment world.
Well, let's go from that perspective to what is the current investor sentiment? And then I guess let's talk first about sellers in the marketplace. Are they dug in feeling like their properties are worth more than what they are, and because they're not cash flowing or maybe their cap rates aren't where they should be due to vacancy rates? Are they just kind of stuck and saying, well, then forget it, I'm not going to sell? What's the seller side of it right now?
The seller side, it's just two different. There's one side where the seller's trying to hang on. They're trying to hang on to their property, keep it full, keep management working, keep the natural flow of move-ins and move-outs at a fairly good rate. The other side is there's sellers out there that need to sell. They need their cash, or their property, it just is not performing the way they originally intended to when they bought it. So they're putting it on the market, but they're not putting it at market rates. Market rates could be, you know, anywhere between 7 and 10 cap. And a cap rate is just a formula used to value a property. Some
we've talked about that on the show.
Okay, great. Some clients are dropping their shorts, and so to speak, and just getting rid of the property because they have to. The bank is looking at taking it back. Some people are just operating it as best they can, trying to weather the storm.
Well, what's the market sentiment on the investor side as a buyer? Are they trying to go out there and snap up properties? Are they lowballing, or are they just kind of holding out? Has the shoe dropped yet, so to speak, for the multifamily housing?
I don't think the shoe's dropped yet. I think we're in a state of transition where there's a buyer and seller there's a difference, a gap. And until that buyer and seller gap closes, we're not going to see as many transactions as we normally would. For a buyer, there are a lot of buyers out there, and I wouldn't consider them lowball. I would consider them reasonable. These reasonable buyers are looking at buying properties, but due to the low transaction volume, that buyer and seller gap's just a little too far apart right now.
Mm-hmm. What segment of the multifamily housing market would you say is still performing or is a good, solid investment? And it doesn't have to be institutional size where it's got a zillion units, but would you say government housing is good? Would you say the middle market or would luxury be better? Where do you feel like the best deals are right now and why?
I feel the best deals right now are in B properties. B properties are competing with the A-class properties, the luxury apartments. These luxury apartments are offering deep, deep concessions. They're offering anywhere up to 3 months free for rent. So they're offering this large concession, which ultimately makes the rent very reasonable and low for new renters. So the B properties need to compete with that. I see a lot of B properties reducing their rents. We're seeing rents in the 2004-2005 level right now. And I think you can get the best deal with a B property. And also you mentioned government housing, affordable housing. Their occupancy is about 96% throughout the valley.
Well, those are pretty good numbers, I would say, in, you know, affordable housing. And I've always been a fan of that because that is our working class, and those are the people that support us in our recreational activities, in our lifestyle activities that we like to enjoy, you know, whether it's going out to dinner, whether it's golfing, spas, resorts, any type of recreation. These are the people that support our lifestyle. And so I'm glad to hear that that housing arena and the people that are choosing to invest to help those people out are seeing good occupancy rates. Where would you say we're going in the next 6 to 12 months?
In the next 6 to 12 months, let me see if I can pull out my crystal ball.
I know, everybody always tells me that. You know, the one time, and you may remember this, the one time that I spoke up and made a prediction, nobody listened to me. And do you remember what that was? When I said the mortgage markets were going to crash in
2004. Oh, you called that.
I know, yeah. And nobody listened to me.
I know, people should listen to you more often.
Yay. Well, I'm glad you think so. Let's see if we can make people listen to you. So pull out your crystal ball, and where do you think the market's going, and how are you advising your clients?
I'm advising my clients on a rental basis. I think ultimately it all has to come down with collections. Collections need to be at a level where they're stable. They're not – your vacancy isn't killing you. So – when I'm advising clients to buy a property, we're looking at current rents, current, you know, collections, actual cap rate, and they're buying on about a mid-7 cap rate because of vacancy. Vacancy, when you stabilize the property, you can get that well into the 10-11 caps, and which produces tremendous cash-on-cash returns. So over the next 6 to 12 months, like you stated before, location, 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 you need to buy a property in a great location with rents that can be moved and occupancy levels that can be played with. I have a listing right now, it's 37% occupied, so that's a very challenging deal. But if you can buy a property today at a reasonable cap rate, you know, with reasonable vacancy levels, anywhere between 15 and 25%, I think you're on the right track to making a great investment.
Would you say that you are seeing as an investment strategy right now to offset vacancy, that are you seeing more deferred maintenance piling up, or are the investors still taking good care of their properties and their tenants, even though they may not be fully leased up?
Yeah, you're seeing deferred maintenance pile up in any property. There's certain things that are getting pushed off. you know, certain small little details that aren't hazardous to the property, they're getting pushed off to the next month or a few months out. But the C properties, you know, the working class properties in okay parts of Phoenix, they're struggling right now. Their occupancy levels are close to 30%, and then they're trying to get them leased up, so they're offering another concession. So collections are somewhere in the 40 to 50% rate of where they should be. Deferred maintenance is a problem. I don't see too much deferred maintenance on A-class properties, but B and C, they're starting to stack up.
They're feeling the pinch, huh?
They are.
So, you know, a few weeks ago, I brought to the attention for our multifamily investors that listen to this show on the Investor's Edge, I said that now is the time to start tackling those projects because I have never seen more incentives from the contractors that go out and perform that work. I mean, painting specials, all kinds of stuff, you know. And so now's the opportunity. Landscape deals, there's everything is at a good price. And if an investor can, if he has some cash reserves, he should really think about not deferring maintenance and taking care of some of those annual expense maintenance expense type of projects that seem like a big chunk now, but could significantly impact his value when he goes to sell in the next 6 to 12 months. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. When there's nothing worse than a property being sold that has units unturned. So if it's not in the normal process to turn the units and get them rented, if a property needs to be sold, that inherently affects the value of the multifamily property.
Mm-hmm. So for just a minute, let's talk about Arizona. What neighborhoods are good to buy in? I know you and I share a listing out in Mesa, but what would you advise people if they were interested in investing in Arizona? Remember, this is a national show, so we have people from all over that may be interested, so they may not know a lot of cross-street terminology, so you don't need to get too specific, but what price range, price point, and property class would you recommend right now for the Arizona market that's got a significant uptick probably in the next 6 to 12 months if the right investor gets a hold of those properties?
Yeah, again, I like B properties. That's my sweet spot. I believe in them. I think they're going to come back once they can be upgraded for location reasons. I mean, everyone loves Scottsdale. Scottsdale is the resort town, but there's no properties available. I like downtown Phoenix for a second location. There's going to be tremendous value with the light rail in the Southeast Valley. You're talking the Chandler, the Gilbert, Mesa area. There's a lot of money going into revitalizing those cities. So, yeah, anywhere where the money is being put from the government is where you want to be.
Well, that's good to know. So do you have a phone number you'd like to give if anybody is interested in contacting you about multifamily investment here in Arizona?
Yeah, that would be great. My office number is 480-656-8636.
Okay, and do you have an email or a web address that you'd like to share also?
I do. It's J, and my last name is spelled M as in Mary, C as in cat, D as in dog, O-N-N-E-L-L at Axiom, AXXIOM.com.
If you're a subscriber to the e-zine, you would have received an email this week with Johnny McAwesome's contact information on it. If you're not currently a subscriber to the e-zine but are interested in future e-zines, simply drop us an email at ezine@unlockyourwealth.com. That's ezine@unlockyourwealth.com, or sign up directly through our website at www.unlockyourwealth.com. Thanks so much for coming and being a part of the Investor's Edge this week, Johnny McAwesome. Keep up the good work and have a great weekend. I appreciate you taking your time out of your weekend. I know you're out of town at your best friend's wedding, so thanks for stopping for a moment to talk with us this week.
Oh, I appreciate the time. I appreciate your time, Heather, and keep steering people in the right direction.
Oh, great. Thanks for that. Okay, folks, up next, we've got lots still in store as we move to 2 hours. You're listening to Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I'm Heather Wagenhals, and we will be back in just a minute.
The best things in life are free. And give them to the birds and bees. I want money. That's what I want. Your love gives me such a thrill. But your love won't pay my bills. I want money.
Are you there?
Welcome back. You are listening to Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I'm Heather Wagenhals, and as we begin our second hour of broadcast this fabulous Saturday here in Arizona, we've got some nice sun and some balmy breeze for all of you allergy sufferers. You're probably running to the hills. What an incredible show so far. I'm so excited about what's going on with Financial Literacy Month. I want to restate, bring back the trivia question for those of you who are scrambling to download last week's broadcast, if you didn't listen, to come up with the answer for today's trivia question, which is name two of the seven fast fixes for your credit score. Name two of the seven fast fixes for your credit score, and to call in with your answers and a chance to win financial coaching as well as our money management ledger, you need to call area code 718-508-9002. 718-508-9002. And now we move to our regularly scheduled segment, which is News by the Numbers with your illustrious segment hostess, Karen Gurm.
Hi, Heather. Thanks.
Glad to have you with us, as always. What kind of news do you have this week?
Well, I'm Karen Gurm, and this is News by the Numbers. And this week we'll be talking about a survey that was done by Move, Inc., the leader in online real estate and operator of Realtor.com, the number one homes for sale website. While half of all Americans are concerned they or someone they know will face foreclosure in the next 6 to 12 months, nearly 25% of adults plan to purchase a home in the next 5 years, and more than half are first-time home buyers. The Move survey also found nearly one out of five homeowners plan to take advantage of the administration's new program to help prevent foreclosures. While searching for answers in the past 12 months, over 20% of all homebuyers with a mortgage contacted a lender to restructure their loan. Half of those homeowners that contacted their lender experienced success, while 5% still await an answer. Unemployment is a driving factor causing many Americans to fear foreclosure, according to the survey. More than a quarter of adults feel they or someone they know may default on their mortgage due to recent unemployment, future unemployment, or because they owe more on their home than it's worth. One out of eight is having a hard time making mortgage payments because they've recently increased or because they have too much debt. Determined to remain in their homes, nearly three-quarters of adults reduced spending in the past year in order to make monthly mortgage or rent payments, mostly by cutting discretionary spending, such as vacations, entertainment and eating out, personal items such as clothing, personal care and personal luxuries, and energy costs such as gasoline and utilities. Regardless of age, most Americans are cutting spending back from some aspect of their life to pay housing costs. Despite today's challenging market conditions, nearly 20% of adults plan to buy a home this year in order to take advantage of the $8,000 tax credit recently passed by Congress in the administration's economic stimulus package. It's not all doom and gloom. We found Americans are optimistic about homeownership despite concerns, said Move, Inc. CEO Steve Berkowitz. They're doing everything they can, from reducing discretionary spending to pay their mortgages to planning to take advantage of the administration's new program to stop foreclosures. They're also working with lenders to modify loans. Even more impactful are numbers that show interest in home ownership is strong, as nearly a quarter of all adults plan to buy a home in the next 5 years. The Move survey found the housing downturn, now entering its third year, has created significant demand for home ownership, especially among first-time home buyers. While nearly 6% plan to purchase a home in the next 12 months, almost 13% of Americans say they plan to buy a home in the next 2 years, and 11% plan to purchase a home in 2 to 5 years. Over half of those planning to buy in 2009 are first-time home buyers. By comparison, 41% of homebuyers in 2008 were first-time homebuyers, according to the National Association of Realtors. While 18% of first-time homebuyers do plan to buy this year to take advantage of the $8,000 tax credit, nearly half said they didn't know about the credit, and almost 30% said it wasn't large enough for them to act right now. Potential homebuyers with higher incomes are more interested in the tax credit than those in lower income brackets, as 43.5% of first-time buyers earning $50,000 or more say they plan to use the tax credit. Potential buyers are watching real estate prices more closely today than 12 months ago. Half of all Americans are paying more attention to home values today than they were ago, especially those aged 25 to 34, as over 60% are. The median age of first-time homebuyers is 30 years old. Having the wealth of information on home values available on Realtor.com makes it easy for potential buyers to research and plan their real estate purchase as they begin their search. In fact, the average buyer researches properties online for 10 months before contacting a realtor. So quick and convenient access to information is critical, especially in today's highly competitive environment, said Errol Samuelson, president of Realtor.com. If you're basing a real estate decision on old or out-of-date information, you risk making a poor decision with potentially significant financial consequences, explained Samuelson. Providing current and detailed information drawn directly from a local MLS in conjunction with our 15-minute update program educates buyers and sellers on market conditions and results in more productive conversation with realtors. And that is your News by the Numbers segment. I'm Karen Grimm.
Thank you so much. That was a wealth of information. I'm so excited to hear that there's actually more buyers in the marketplace. And you'd probably guess, wouldn't you, Karen, that that's because now that home prices have come down, the first-time home buyers feel like they can actually get a little piece of the American dream?
You are absolutely right, Heather.
Great. Well, thanks so much for that informative News by the Numbers segment this week. Are you a referral partner to the Unlock Your Wealth radio program yet? Would you like to advertise on our show? Learn about the benefits that our featured advisors receive being part of an exclusive program where the listeners are seeking financial independence and are in need of your insurance, finance, real estate, and investment services. To get involved in the program, please call 866-966-9420. 866-966-9420. 9420. And now we move to my favorite person right now, my neurolinguistic programming master practitioner, trainer, and personal success coach. Bill Thomason has toured with personal power guru Tony Robbins, and we bring him to the broadcast today to help us get started on the road to financial independence. So everybody, please help me welcome Bill Thomason. Bill, are you there?
I'm right here. Good morning. How's it going?
Oh, we're having a fabulous broadcast this morning. We had the incredible Sharon Lecter, who just kind of is parallel to what we teach and preach and how we like to go forward with things. And so I'm just so excited. You know, one of the things that really influenced my Keys to Riches program and took it to the next level. I formed it about 8 years ago, and then 4 years ago, I stumbled upon neurolinguistic programming, which is the search for excellence and success modeling. And when I found it, I was actually in search of a way to analyze my stepson's learning style so we could teach to his learning style. He's one of those kids that has ants in his pants. And so I thought, well, maybe they're just not teaching to his learning style, and if we could figure that out, then we could help him succeed. And what I found out when I learned about neurolinguistic programming is not only did it help me help him, but it empowered me as well, and it materially influenced my work with the Keys to Riches and the workshops that I do and how I teach people. And as I was in search of becoming a certified practitioner myself, I stumbled upon you, and what a fortunate day it was for me, because I was now able to take all this information and have somebody who is such an expert at it like yourself really teach me how to integrate it into my life to propel me to the next level. So one, I'm really grateful for that, but second, I wanted to ask you, why do people complain about certain behaviors within themselves but fail to make the necessary changes?
Well, Heather, thank you for the introduction. And the question you're asking is pretty much one we all deal with. We all get stuck by something, don't we?
Yes.
So what we're looking at is people have an idea about things, but they don't get all the pieces in place. We say in NLP that you really want to figure out, well, what it is you want, because lots of people know what they don't want. So when people come to me for coaching, most often that's what I'm dealing with, is having them shift from what they don't want, first of all, to what they do want, and then the whole idea that you need some sort of opportunity to accomplish something. So you decide you want something, you get the opportunity, you actually create that opportunity, you also need the energy to. So one thing is about, we talk a lot about state work. So what is state? State's the energy you have to actually achieve anything that you want. Some people don't have the physical health, they don't have the emotional health, they don't have the whatever it takes for them to take action. So just having the decision and the opportunity and the energy to still didn't make anything happen until you actually do take action. So that's the key issue for people. And people are stopped for all kinds of reasons.
Now, one of the things and why I'm so excited to have you on today's broadcast is because we're starting through the keys from the very beginning again. And our first key this week that we're featuring is acceptance and affirmation. And part of the difficult thing for people, at least this is what I have seen and experienced in my mortgage practice and my real estate practice, is that people just can't seem to accept responsibility for their actions. And now, I know that most of these actions and some of these limiting behaviors that people have is something that was set in motion that had nothing to do with them, from possibly single event learning scenarios or stuff that they observed from their parents. For example, the money management skills I took into the world when I became my own person was, if you have a coupon or it's on sale, you have a moral obligation to buy it. Whether or not you need it is not relevant. Whether or not you have 10 of the same thing back at home in the wrappers unused, you still need to get that because you have to save money. And that's the way you save money, by spending it. And I remember that term in the late 90s called spaving. Honey, I just bought this dress. It was 50% off. I saved so much money. And the husband goes, imagine how much more you would have saved if you just wouldn't have bought it.
Yeah.
So, you know, Absolutely. So we get caught in these really destructive habits, and I can go on ad nauseum with some of the examples. Every time my girlfriend and her husband would get into a fight, she would go out and blow a couple thousand bucks on her credit cards. And she goes, that's just what you do. And I said, but you're not getting him back. You're burying yourself in debt. And that came from when she was small and when her parents would fight. Her mother would round her and her sister up, and off to the mall they would go to blow some cash. That's what her mother would do. But the difference between her and her mother is, you know, her parents were affluent. They had money. She didn't. Her mother was spending cash. And so this pattern she took with her into adulthood.
Well, I think you've actually hit on the really core thing. In fact, we call it the core programming. So if you think about the whole computer model of people, we've all got a pretty similar hardware. We've all got like that CP unit that computers started in, the big box, and we're not that much different from person to person. Where the differences are is more in the software. So NLP actually started around this computer metaphor. NLP is neuro-linguistic programming. It is the success technology that took Anthony Robbins to become the number one motivational speaker in the world, and lots of other people to be extremely successful. It's that core programming really does start really early. And it's, some people say it's in place, your core programming in place by age 4 or 5, and most of us do make decisions that make up our programming. One of the core decisions you made was to be like your mom. Another decision was probably to be like your dad, and the good news is that you probably got some good programming there. Bad news? Well, you got a bunch of stuff that's not really useful to you as adults. So the first thing that you're in your scenarios that's really great is that you're beginning to identify that something about the programming is limiting. It's not actually getting you as much of what you want. So as you begin to get that there's something not working, then you can get really serious and really on target about where you are now. So we want to start from here. And taking a really, I understand that it's part of what you're doing is having people really look and see what the reality of things are right now. Taking a good, whole, cold, hard eye and examining your buying habits, the way you think about money, the way your parents thought about money will give you big insights into that, and the way they use money, because you probably are doing just what, I want to be like my mommy, I want to be like my daddy, what that called for you to do in your life as an adult. And now taking a good look at it, how do you change it? For most people, if you think about this, most people, based on the core programming, don't change much in their lives. So what we're talking about is, well, how do you actually create change? Because we are habitual creatures. We make patterns out of everything. And what NLP is a technology for profound personal change. We've actually studied what the mechanisms are. Well, how do you wake up tomorrow after 30, 40 years of being a smoker and just not smoke anymore? We get people with those kinds of behaviors that shift change all very profoundly, and they just don't have the behavior anymore. We also get people who do a little bit of work on something, and the prosperity issue is a really great one because it's measurable. I mean, we can do some work on you and you're going to be happier. It's a little harder to measure that than it is, I want to make an extra $100,000 this year, or I want to reach the $2 million mark. Wherever it is for you, in the goal setting part of it, whatever it is for you, we say it's possible if you can make a decision at a deep emotional level that's actually going to shift or change the programming there. So this technology I work with actually has lots of different ways of getting there. Does that make sense, Heather?
Oh, absolutely. And let's take a specific instance, and how can we apply that? Because, you know, one of the things that I always tell people when they come to me and they say they want help, yet they're resistant to change, either because, one, they won't admit they have an issue, but people, in my experience, don't change until the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of change. And then when the change part is the easy part because they're so uncomfortable with where they're at, then and only then will they make the difference and make that change. Would you agree?
That's absolutely right. And I think what we're pointing to now is that, well, there's, if I get enough pain, I'll make a change. The big question is, will it be a permanent change? So how do you get that programming in at the deeper emotional level where you just begin to operate your life in a different way than you had before? We got to get into that deeper level programming to do that. So the next phase in this is, well, how do you get a new program in? And how do you make sure that you, there's a part you said, affirmation and acceptance. Well, the affirmation part, well, you want to say things in the positive. You want to actually shift your language. These are things you can do. Every listener out there can begin to get more aware of, more conscious of, because in neurolinguistic programming, narrow brain and nervous system, linguistic language, not only what we say inside our heads and to others, but what we're doing with our bodies, all of that is creating the programming. So you begin to listen to language first. So first piece is, well, the places where you use the word but would be a good example. So where you use the word but, it actually negates the sentence before. So if I'm noticing that your shoes are really a nice color of brown and your skirt seems to match that, but your top is white, what's the impact?
I didn't hear the first part.
Yeah, you're just waiting for the other foot to fall, right? So there's
something
about the word but that actually has an impact that isn't the one you intended. There's also, if I just say now your nice color of shoes and your skirt matches and your top is white, you don't get that but in there, do you? It's a whole different meaning. So what's the impact of that?
Well, now I don't feel bad about my top being white, even though my shoes and skirt are brown.
Exactly. So there's little things like that, and then there's just in language that you want something to happen in your life. You want language that has action in it. Lots of us use language like, well, I'm kind of thinking about the possibility of maybe it'll come out this way, and we could, in some eventuality, take some kind of action that eventually would have some effect in the world. Now, you know people who talk this way. And
that's such wishy-washy, non-committal language.
And you don't see action occurring in their lives until they actually get, if it's about you want your child, especially a male child, to go out and cut the grass, well, I cut the grass. I cut grass. That's a direct statement that actually has some action attached to it. So beginning to get the qualifiers and the quantifiers out of your language has a big impact. So action language stated in the positive, not the negative. So you want things that it's not what I don't want, it's what you do want. So you want to shift sometimes from, you'll notice that it's actually a little difficult sometimes to get the negative out of the language because you're so clear about what you don't want that you have to look for, well, what's the opposite of the thing that I'm avoiding? Well, if I'm avoiding foreclosure on my house, then I want to shift it from avoiding foreclosure, which on the good side does actually build up the moving away from, avoid pain model of things. You want to get to, I want to actually create a sound portfolio. I want to be successful with my finances. So you're getting language that you can even begin to eliminate the want to out of it and get it as if it was the positive, the present right now. I succeed. I generate income. I have language that gives me exactly what I want. Are you getting the point of this?
Yes. Isn't that the section of NLP where we talk about how important it is to act as if?
And it's act as if. There's a way of getting yourself from, well, I know what I want now, so that's a big thing. I got the energy to, still nothing happened, but I want to get to actually taking action about something. Well, there's one idea of it, and it's a thing that the government spent lots of money on, figuring this thing out, because if you remember the Pretender television show, they actually spent a lot of money teaching people how to be doctors one day, fighter pilots the next day, those kinds of things. So what if you could do anything that you could even imagine doing in a really short period of time like those people do? NLP is based on finding people who are good at what they do and finding out how they do it. So we study those kinds of people to figure out what are the critical elements of it. People who, you'll notice this for yourself, there have been times when you said in your head, I don't know how to do this, and yet you started acting as if you could do it. You just started somewhere. Doesn't matter where. You get started at some point. Even a small action today, repeated tomorrow and the next day, and over a 30-day period of time is going to create a huge behavioral change and action out in the world. So you'll get different results than you would have gotten if you hadn't acted now. So acting as if is a way that you'll find that you're doing things you didn't even think you could do just because you act as if you could. And I think most people have at least some example in their life of actually that happening for them. So you can probably think back and remember something like that occurring for you.
Oh, and I loved that TV show, The Pretender, too. That was so great because I was like, oh, man, you know, it's the ultimate fake it till you make it and act as if. You know, it's just, I remember one of my friends, we were really young and just kind of overachievers, and we used to do a lot of public speaking, and, you know, we were in our early 20s, and both of us came from very, very poor families, and he used to always say, I'm a millionaire, and then you would look at him because you'd know, like, you're 23, but then he would say, after he would say that, he would pause, and then he would say, I'm just telling you the truth in advance. And I loved that. I loved that because I thought that,
go ahead.
Well, because it set you up for success. So when he would say that, you would look at him, and there was no question in your mind that he was committed to that. His physiology said so. The strength and power and conviction of his voice, his facial expressions, everything were in line with the fact that, by golly, he was a millionaire.
Yeah. And you'll notice that people who are highly successful in one area or another have a high level of congruence. And one of the things we actually teach as if it was a skill, because you already know how to do this, when you know somebody, you just know that somebody is confident or successful in a particular area. They actually stand a certain way. They hold their body a different way. There's a way that they speak. And it's all the different parts of the behavior are in congruence. In other words, they all match up. They all sync up. When people are not congruent, you get a whole different impact. I can remember somebody coming to us in our business one day and saying, I'll do anything but right by you. And his head was shaking. Well, the shaking of the head didn't match what we thought. It sounded like he might be saying. In fact, as you listen to what I just said, listen to it again and see if you catch the problem with the sentence, I'll do anything but right by you.
Yeah.
I'll do anything but right by you. Now, some of you, when you heard me say it the first time, went, oh, he wants to do things right by them. But it's not what his programming calls for. So you begin to pay attention to the way people communicate, because to be that millionaire you're talking about, to be congruent in whatever area of success you're looking to be congruent in, we say that experience has structure. We can actually find out how that congruence works, how specifically you think about it, how what the beliefs are that you're holding, and all the different aspects that go into it make up how you're going to model success with a particular individual. So there's actually a whole science around this. So those are some of the first clues. Speak in the positive, not the negative. Also, eliminate the qualifiers and the quantifiers out of the language. Make whatever your goal or outcome is self-generating. In other words, depends only on you to make the change. It's not about other people doing anything. Get to be 100% responsible for whatever's happening, and that's a pretty big conversation right there. How do you get to be 100% responsible for things? Point is, as you clean up your language, you'll find that the behavior tends to follow. So make it easier for yourself. Shift the language from being incongruent, from having too many qualifiers and quantifiers, into being self-generating, free of qualifiers and quantifiers, and action-oriented, and you'll find yourself simply getting more success.
So if we were to apply that, for example, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross writes about the grieving process, and the first stage is denial, and it takes us about 5 steps to get to acceptance. Without spending too much time, because I think a lot of people abdicate responsibility when it comes to money to other people, so they're not at fault. And I think that sometimes people feel like as if they accept responsibility, all of a sudden that they have to accept some fault, and it's so much easier to blame others. Well, if my job, my boss wouldn't have fired me, and, you know, if I'd have been born in a better income bracket, because that was the one I used to always say.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, if this, or if my husband or my wife or my kids or whatever, and is there a way that we can move to complete acceptance and 100% responsibility without having to get caught up in the blame cycle and just say, look, okay,
yeah,
things have been bad, and it doesn't matter whose fault it is. What matters is that I'm willing to take 100% responsibility for this and move forward and take an empowering move by accepting it. Is there a way we can do that and be congruent and get from that denial to acceptance without punishing ourselves?
Well, I think there is, and I thank you for asking and framing that question. The first thing that came up to me, and I think Kubler-Ross would agree with this, because what she's about in the grieving process, it's a healing process. When I have people who come to me for business coaching or for life coaching, quite often what's in the way of success for people is, first of all, it's negative programs. It's also the piece about the blame thing, that whatever is happening out there is to blame for it, and we're coming back to that 100% responsibility. The second thing is about forgiveness. And quite often I have to take people through some process, because for them to get free in the programming, the idea that the early programming got in place by the time of you're 4 or 5 years old, certainly by age 7 most of it, early in life, and you're still running your life, when you get a little stressed, there's probably about an 8-year-old or 9-year-old or younger in there who's running your game. Well, if you could forgive the people, could be mom, could be dad, could be somebody else, whoever you're holding blame, resentment for, you think about, well, who does that really hurt? For you to hold those negative emotions in your body, it's not very healthy. It's not healthy for your body, and it's not healthy for your mind and emotion and spiritual being. So forgiveness is a big part of it, and people just don't know how to forgive sometimes, and they don't realize that it's not really about the other person who you forgive for, that it's really going to do the most for you, because quite often, whoever you're holding that resentment against, they don't even know. Even if they do, they may not care. So who's suffering? You're suffering. Why not let yourself out of the prison? So forgiving yourself is going to be the ultimate thing. You may need to forgive some other people in your life first, and when it gets to yourself, you're going to be free. From that point, you can build a new future, and it's an incredibly important piece of how you create the successes and model the expertise and genius of other people in the world that you would like to be like. To create those riches, to create the success in the keys, go to forgiveness first and let the energy get freed up again that you were holding to keep everything together. So imagine how much energy that would create in your life and what you'd be doing with that energy if it got freed up today. Because what I know is that forgiveness happens in a blink of an eye. It happens in a moment. It may take you, change in general happens in the blink of an eye. It may take you years to build up to a point where you're ready to change. And in the moment you do, your whole life opens up. Things become possible that simply weren't before. I hope all that.
I saw that firsthand going through the training with you and just watching the exponential change that happened with myself and my protege, but the other people in the class, just seeing the steps of where they started and where they ended up. And I'm so proud because on Monday we have our last section and I guess our final exam with you to graduate from practitioner training. And I just look over the last 6 weeks and how much that we've put in and the dues that we've paid, but the personal change that each one of us has really made has been amazing and so prophetic. And yet you're right. You look at all of this that we've been carrying stuff for years, but in a moment, in just one blink of an eye, time changes and then everything becomes possible once you just make that shift. And that's what's so great about the power of neurolinguistic programming. And as much as I would like to keep you all to myself, so I become uber successful with your coaching and expert tutelage, I would like to share you with my audience. So I do financial coaching, and now that I've had your expert tutelage, I've taken it to the next level and incorporated it with the coaching that we do. But if somebody wanted just basic life coaching or business coaching or some other aspect of neurolinguistic programming, how can they contact you outside of subscribing to the e-zine? And for those of you that did subscribe this week, you would have received this week's issues with links to Bill's website. If you're interested in subscribing, please drop me an email at ezine@unlockyourwealth.com. Or go to www.unlockyourwealth.com to the subscription page and sign up, and you can receive all of these goodies. So, Bill, how can people get a hold of you?
Well, thank you for putting the website link. My telephone number is 602-321-7192, 602-321-7192. And email is NLPskills, N as in Nancy, Larry Paul, SKILLS, NLPskills@earthlink.net.
Great. And we'll also have that on the website on our list of show guests. They'll also be able to link through with that. Bill, do you have any parting thoughts that you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, I really appreciate your talking about the impact of the training that you've been through, and I'm just so grateful, and on a ongoing basis. I get to do this work with people all year round. I do three or four different practitioner trainings. About 90% of the people who come through one of those are not so much doing it for to become practitioners and do that as a livelihood, but they use it in their business and personal lives. And I get to be present to the courage it takes for people to make those kinds of deep level changes and get their lives freed up to do whatever they want to do. And they come out with skills that make a difference in their communication and persuasion, and all of those are aspects of the work. So I just appreciate the opportunity to talk a little bit about my favorite thing to do in the world. So just thank you for allowing me to be with you and with your listeners.
Outstanding. And again, we appreciate you taking your time out of your weekend to give us your attention and share your insight. So for those of you that want to get a hold of Bill, you can link through the website, through the e-zine, or to him directly at nlpskills@earthlink.net. Coming up next, we still have more. We have Minutes on Your Money, Nuts and Bolts, and more on This Week's Key, all on Unlock Your Wealth Radio. You're listening to Heather Wagenhals. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the program. For those of you just tuning in, you are listening to Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I am your hostess, Heather Wagenhals, as we work through crisis management and learn tips and tools, techniques for financial health and wellness so we can, too, achieve financial independence. This week's Minutes on Your Money segment, I found this interesting article because last week we talked about losing our employer matching on our 401ks. Now it seems that folks are talking about dipping into their 401ks or IRAs to get over their current financial woes. What we have today is can't stay away from your 401k or IRA. Robert Powell from MarketWatch.com writes about a Bank of America survey that indicated 18% of Americans had withdrawn retirement assets prematurely because of the current economic turmoil. Folks have raided their accounts to pay for near-term financial obligations like credit card debt and mortgage payments. But more than one in five of those people had withdrawn money early from their retirement funds because of recent job losses. Now, folks, this is our last resort. What are we thinking? You know, what we have the rule of 72 operating smoothly inside these. And the rule of 72, for those of you just joining us for the first time, is simply the time it takes for your money to double based on the current interest rate. So, for example, if you're in an interest rate of 12% a year, it takes 6 months for your money, or 6 years, sorry, 6 years for your money to double. So if you have $2,000 in your account, in 6 years, you're going to have $4,000. But then in another six, you're going to have $8,000, then $16,000. Do you see how this grows exponentially? So the minute we dip in, we goof up that power of compounded interest. Now, some of you people are feeling like my back's against the wall. This is the last thing that I had as a bastion of getting myself out of my current financial situation. So here are some tips from the experts. If, as a last resort, you must borrow or take a distribution from your IOA, IRA, or 401k before age 59 and a half, you can do a few things. Number one, you can do a 60-day rollover. You can avoid paying ordinary income tax and the 10% penalty by doing a loan. So if you can pay it back within 30 days, there's an option. If you know that you're not going to see that money, you're going to wind up getting stuck with A, ordinary income tax, and B, 10% penalty. So check with your tax professional before trying anything. But you can also do a partial rollover and be taxed on only the amount that you don't roll back into the account. My theory is if you're going to roll, you want to roll to a self-directed IRA so you can use that money for investment to generate more money. We have to make sure that our perspectives here aren't short-sighted, that we're looking down the road, not just to next month's mortgage payment. If next month's mortgage payment is that big a problem, maybe we need to reevaluate, should I have one to begin with? Next, IRAs are and penalty-free distributions. You will still have to pay ordinary income tax, but there are certain things you can take a penalty-free distribution from. So again, you don't pay the extra 10% WAC, but you still have to pay income taxes on it. That's only if you have medical expenses that exceed 7.5% of your adjusted gross income, college expenses for you, your spouse, or your child, and first-time home buyers can also take a penalty-free one-time distribution of up to $10,000. But again, you're still paying income tax, so you need to really think about this before you do it. You can also avoid the penalty if you take a series of distributions called substantially equal periodic payments. You could do a loan against your 401k also, but if you quit or leave your job, you must pay it back right away. It's immediately due. If not, it's going to be considered a distribution, and then you have income tax and the 10% penalty. You can do a hardship distribution, but you have to be able to document and justify it. If you have a heavy financial need, like a to avoid foreclosure, then you can do a hardship distribution. Again, you still pay income tax, but you may be able to avoid that 10% penalty. Now, certain medical expenses, principal residence, tuition, things like that, again, there's got to be other ways, and try to really think about how you can avoid tapping your 401k by just simply being creative. But those, if you must, again, talk to your tax professional, because I am not an accountant, nor do I play one on TV, but this is information you need to know. So today's key is acceptance and affirmation. And we had a great conversation with Bill Thomason about this. And this is super important because, you know, personal exploration and self-discovery and self-mastery on our journey through life is so important. And these are the things that we need to do. We need to come to terms with what we've done and accept that if we don't, we're not going to be able to make a move to change it. Plus, if we plan a goal in the future and we don't know where we stand, we can't really know how much work it's going to take to get there. And that first step is acceptance, okay? And once you have accepted that you have an issue and know for yourself that in order for you to build and accumulate lasting wealth for yourself and for your family, it starts with you. You must acknowledge and accept the following statements to be true. And that is, first, whether knowing or unknowing, I understand that my current financial lot in life is due to the decisions that I have made. But you also need to know that, number two, regardless of fault, I accept that I am where I am, and it is because of me. Though once I accept responsibility for my current situation, I am now empowered to change it. Folks, this is so important because just because you haven't managed money well in the past doesn't mean you won't do well in the future. You just need to reorganize the resources that you already have to be successful. And with the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation coaching, our financial coaching can assist you in accomplishing those goals. But outside of that, just listening to this broadcast, every week we will bring you the tools you need to become successful and help create the foundation for your financial independence. And with education and assistance from professionals in their field, you too can become financially independent. So the second part of the acceptance and affirmation process is to create an affirmation. Now, in order for affirmations to work, you have to convince the little fellow that I call the curmudgeon. And he's kind of this little inner voice that I've given this affectionate name to. He's a middleman or a go-between. And your curmudgeon is your own internal party pooper. He can be a protector from time to time, so there is real use and value for him in most situations. But, however, he can still be the start of your pity party. And the way affirmations work is you have a conscious state, which is what you're thinking about right now, and it's what your one focus is at any given moment. And then you have your subconscious state, which is always just below the level of conscious thought, and it is always working to create environments and scenarios through the programs and patterns you have learned, whether you consciously learned them by active learning, choosing to learn it yourself, or by the values and core programming that we receive from our parents as children. So our unconscious level can actually manage up to 40 billion bits of information at every given moment. And just because you are paying attention and listening to my voice here on the radio doesn't mean that your body doesn't know exactly where it is. Your unconscious is paying attention to where your feet are on the floor as you're reclining in that easy chair, the sound of the guy next door mowing the lawn. You're paying attention to all of this, but not in a conscious fashion. So what we're going to do is we're going to use our conscious to help program our unconscious. And we're going to do that by convincing my little fellow, the curmudgeon. His intent is good, and he's trying to keep us from feeling hurt or disappointed, which is always a painful place, and most people don't like to be in pain. So instead of risking the opportunity to grow and flourish, because change, as we have acknowledged, is quite painful, he only sees the cup as half empty, and he focuses on your potential to fail. So instead of risking defeat, humiliation, and failure, the curmudgeon will talk you out of whatever you're fired up for. So what we need to do is reprogram him and beat him against the head and convince him otherwise. And we do that with the affirmation process. I'm going to get in my tongue twisters here now. And I've created this system called the 5 P's to affirmation success. Now, if you're not subscribed to the e-zine, you do so by dropping me an email at ezine@unlockyourwealth.com or registering on the website at www.unlockyourwealth.com. I will send you a free workbook on the affirmation process and how the 5 P's can help propel you to success. And simply, an affirmation must contain these 5 things in order for them to work. 1, they must be personal. You can't have an affirmation for somebody else. Like, I want my kid to go to college. That's not an affirmation. So it's got to be about you, 1. It's got to be present tense. Like Bill talked about, acting as if it's already happening. So I am. It's got to be possible, meaning within your power to do it. You can't control whether or not you win the lottery, but you can control how you apply yourself every day to make money. It must be positive. Remember, Bill said to focus on what we do want, not what we don't want. And the key is practiced. We must use our affirmations regularly. If we say them before we go to bed and write them down and read them at that time, it gives our brains 8 hours of unfettered opportunity to create the programs and patterns in place to be successful. And so we say them before bed. And then we say them when we get up in the morning before the curmudgeon starts his negative self-talk. Now you can program yourself for success first thing. Then anytime we are confronted with negativity throughout the day, we want to pull out our affirmation worksheet and we want to reread them. And so we can find a way to be successful. So Our key this week is, I know deep down that whether I like it where I'm at or not, by accepting responsibility, I have the power to change it for the betterment of me and those around me. Our key statement is, I am great with managing money. And our key action item is to begin the affirmation process. So if you email us, you will be able to have the worksheet. Otherwise, get to work, replay this broadcast, and get those five P's working for you today. Next week, we have a fabulous show. We've got our Dan Doncia, loan modification expert, and our key then will be take action and make assessment. You have been listening to the Unlock Your Wealth radio show. The Keys to Riches is a baker's dozen of financial concepts that help you achieve financial independence. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Heather Wagenhals, and we'll see you next Saturday.
I've had it up to here, listening to a small segment of people trying to put down America. America's the greatest land on earth, and we ought to be proud of what we have. I'm proud of America. I'm proud of our people, and I'm going to prove it. We're American, and damn proud of it.
Frankly, I'm getting a little ticked off.
Go to hell.